Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Peter Cookson. And Peter and I, Dr. Peter Cookson, and the doctor and I are going to talk about what makes COVID different from other pandemics of the past. So, Peter, I think people are getting COVID fatigue. They're just worn out. And, you know, I think the medical community, the nurses, I can't even imagine what they're going in, what they're feeling right about now. So it's your understanding from reading and research and being a doctor that you feel that COVID is different from other pandemics of the past?
Yes, I do. Excuse me. And what is of concern is that the virus has the capacity to, or allegedly has the capacity to mutate in ways that other organisms responsible for pandemics in the past do not. And that caused me to reflect on or to reread a text written some years ago by Laurie Garrett. And the name of the book is The Coming Plague, and it has been referred to by a number of other researchers. And I came across, when I got to Chapter 7, I came across a comment made by Dr. Louis Pasteur, French microbiologist of great renown. And his comment was, the microbe, in our case the virus, is nothing. The terrain is everything. And the terrain that he's referring to in the case of the epidemics, pandemics, and tuberculosis was one of the major organisms that he was dealing with. The terrain is the human immune system or the human body. And so the question that I have been dealing with for some time is, how is the human body, how is the human immune system today, different today as compared with, say, in years past? And what comes to mind right away is the health of the citizens of the USA is different from today, is different from the way it was in years past. For instance, even at the time of the pandemic of 1918-1919. And how is it different? Well, what we have learned in the last 20, 30 years or so is that a large segment, as much as 85% of our immune system resides in our gut. And if you are eating food that contains an antibiotic in it, like glyphosate, then you are going to impair or even utterly destroy your immune system, mostly impair or your immune system. And we are seeing the manifestations of this factor of eating contaminated food in the form of what's called chronic autoimmune diseases. And just psoriasis advertisements on the television are remarkably frequent, and rheumatoid arthritis advertisements, etc. There's whole bunches of advertisements for pharmaceuticals to combat the immune system, the autoimmune diseases. But I don't want to get into that. What we really need to do is to look at why is this pandemic so persistent? And why is it behaving in ways that we haven't seen pandemics behave in the past? And so the easy explanation for that is, well, this particular organism is capable of making mutations very quickly and easily, and each mutation demands a different response from the immune system. And if the immune system is primed for, if the immune system is impaired, then it will not be able to respond, and people will get sick. And depending upon the catastrophe, you know, depending upon the status of their immune system, they will get sicker or less sick. And that's a very different topic to get into, and what actually does happen when the virus does afflict the individual. But the other point is worth looking at, and that is, you know, I'm alive in this 2021, 2022, and I am constantly looking at the mainstream media, constantly looking at information flow using the television, and subscribing to journals, and talking and listening to other, well, knowledgeable people. So what I'm concerned about is this particular virus has been out there for, you know, at least since 2019, and the people who are responsible for formulating a vaccine for it have not modified the vaccine in all of that period of time. Yet they are very knowledgeable people working for the pharmaceutical corporations who are manufacturing these vaccines, and suggesting that the best way to end this pandemic is to get a vaccine or get vaccinated. And then they said, well, that's not working very well, so what you need is a booster. Well, why do we need a booster? Well, we need a booster because your immune system is not responding adequately or for a long enough duration to protect you And then it's certainly not adequate to protect you from the mutations that the virus has been able to achieve. So my point is, where I'm going with this is, again, asking questions, not answering them, and that is, how come they haven't been working on new vaccines? How come they haven't been offering new vaccines or vaccines that are updated with regard to the changes that the virus has been able to make? Why have we not heard anything about a new vaccine for the Delta strain? All we hear, the response to that was, "Well, get another booster, and that will boost your immune system, which is already impaired, which is already knocked down by other factors, notably our food." So, and then along comes this Omicron with as many as 50 mutations. How does that happen? All of a sudden we have an organism that has mutated so vastly that it's virtually impossible to deal with the current vaccine. So what I mean to say is that the current vaccines, that mutation completely subverts or does an end run around the vaccines that have been offered to or given to the citizens of this country or to the citizens of the planet.
Okay, yes. Peter, I've got a question.
Please.
What's the difference between the first two vaccines that everybody got, whether they got, you know, Moderna or Pfizer or J&J, what's the difference between the first two vaccinations and the booster?
Nothing. It's the same. It's the same chemical, and the as far as I can tell, the dosage is different, but it's the same chemical. There's no difference. So they haven't updated it. They just think, you know, maybe we'll just give it a quote booster unquote. And that is what they have noticed, is that if you measure the antibodies in the bloodstream of those individuals who are quote fully vaccinated unquote, that is who have had the first two doses, you find that the number of antibodies specifically designed to combat the coronavirus has fallen off to, in some cases, levels that are barely measurable. So they say, well, what we need to do is to stimulate the immune system one more time, and perhaps that will increase the number of antibodies so that when you get exposed to, when these people are getting exposed to the coronavirus, they won't get sick. Well, that there's a couple things problems with that. Number one is there a problem with the basic biology of this particular type of vaccine? Number two is, why aren't these people able to maintain an elevated level of antibodies? And number three is, if they can't maintain an elevated level of antibodies, are these people getting sick again? That is, people who are fully vaccinated getting sick again and winding up in the hospital. And is somebody fussing with the numbers in the hospital? I don't know. That's a question. And other good people have looked at all of those, and they have offered suggestions as to why it is. What's happening? Why are things occurring that don't make any sense? At least they don't agree with what we've been told.
Okay, so let me ask you this. In 1918,
yes.
Was there a vaccine back then?
No. Nope.
So it just ran its course.
Correct. Right, yeah. Vaccines were generally not available, except perhaps for the vaccinia for smallpox. But that's the only one that comes to my mind that was out there and that people were working with or were aware of. And that had just begun to become available or people have just begun to understand or use the vaccine against smallpox. But as far as any other vaccines are concerned, no. Dr. Salk was truly a pioneer in the development of the polio vaccine. Not only was he a pioneer for developing a vaccine specifically for polio, but also for developing the technique or the understanding of how a vaccine works and how can you develop what components of the virus does one need to use in order to stimulate the immune system of the recipient into whom you have injected this component of the virus. You know, do you use dead virus? Do you use live virus? Do you use half a virus? Do you use the whole thing dead? You know, and how do you deal with the virus in such a way that you don't utterly destroy it, so it's a meaningless injection. So, you know, he was truly a pioneer in solving all of those questions. And bless his heart when he figured it out and started manufacturing the vaccine, he said, this belongs to the citizens of the planet. This does not belong to me. I will not patent this, or he patented it and gave it away, one or the other. Truly a hero, and he should be acclaimed as such. So does that answer your question, or is that too much rambling?
No, that's good. So who do you think developed the vaccine for the coronavirus?
Okay. All right. My reference on that is that the large corporations who are currently manufacturing these were involved in the research of what's called messenger RNA vaccinations long before the coronavirus was, long before we found out that the coronavirus was on the scene or was a player or was out there, which is of some interest. And I wonder why they were doing that and why did they select the coronavirus as a topic. I don't know. I hear a little beeping noise. Are we going to be canceled? What there?
No. No.
Okay. So your question is when. If the question is when, it was before I became aware of the fact that the Chinese were dealing with a virus in the city of Wuhan. So. And so that poses other questions like why and so on. So we're talking 2019, sometime during 2019, those companies were involved in that kind of research, okay? And so when they finally were able to go from the laboratory to production, that wasn't until late 2020. and early 2021. So they were working on it for some time before. It's a complex process, and start making millions of doses of vaccine, and then put them. Have you ever watched the pictures on the TV of the production line? It's absolutely astounding. How do they make all those little bottles? It's like, oh my goodness gracious! And then they put the lids on and sterilize them. That's huge, an incredible problem to solve, and they solved it. how they did? It's just amazing engineering that they were able to do that. Unfortunately, they weren't able to keep up with the biology. The engineering was one part, and they solved that part, but they haven't solved the biological problem that the virus has presented to them and will continue to present to them as long as it's around.
Okay, so let's go back to 1918.
Yes.
The foods that people ate then,
yes,
were not genetically modified.
Correct.
They weren't as poisoned as they are today.
No.
So if it's the food supply and the food agribusiness is not going to change their way of doing things and keep on giving foods that are compromised, then is it your view that this pandemic is here to stay?
The simple answer to your question is yes. I don't envision the agribusiness or the food processors changing their ways. Most recently, I think I quoted to, or I read yesterday in the Schenectady Gazette, it was an interesting editorial piece written by a very knowledgeable and responsible person in the agricultural business who is saying that, in order to circumvent the requirement in the state of Vermont, for one, that foods that contain genetically modified components, that is corn, for instance, or soy, be labeled contains GMO. And so they were able to lobby the regulatory agencies, the FDA and the USDA, to allow them to, instead of saying does not contain GMO, they allowed them to put in there, it contains bioengineered components. And mm-hmm. So hoping that by changing the name, people would not understand that they were eating the same stuff on Tuesday that they were eating on Saturday before. So so this is, the money involved here is so stupendous in terms of quantity that there's no reason for me to expect that this is going to change unless we see some other changes elsewhere in our governmental system or our political system, which is not a biological system that I am suited to comment on, at least not here.
So, there's a big fear amongst my friends who say, have you got your booster yet? Have you been vaccinated? That's the whole thing. People are turning against each other. There's not the contact. There's not the camaraderie that there used to be. And it all comes back to, have you been vaccinated? Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely, and I've seen it here in my own own household, okay? I have a very good friend who has refused to be vaccinated, and my wife says, I don't want her in the house anymore. And so I acceded to my wife's wishes, and when I need to communicate with my very good friend, I go over to her house, and then she lends me books and texts, etc., that she has collected, and we discuss the contents, and then I come back here. and I haven't brought anything back here, but that underscores exactly what you're saying, and that is very divisive.
Right.
And there's just no way I can convince anybody otherwise, because the power of the propaganda machine that is controlled by the pharmaceutical industry, et cetera, is far exceeds anything I can combat by rationale.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wow. So if there's other mutations, a new virus, whatever, if our food supply is not taken care of, this problem's only going to get worse.
That is correct. And that was one of the points that I was making, but not as directly as you point, as you bring it out. And that is the point I was making, is that we are beginning to see autoimmune diseases, that's the term that's currently used, expand or increasing in number dramatically over the course of the last 20, 30 years or so, mostly 20 years or so at least. And this the change in the numbers or the increase in the number of cases of these autoimmune disorders is directly related, in my opinion, to the failure or the changes that have occurred in our immune systems. And those changes are directly related to the food that we eat that's contaminated.
So back in 1918, 1919, it ran its course over a two-year period
yes.
for the most part.
Yes.
Okay. This is lingering. I mean, with the new variant, it's
yes.
just spreading all over. So it's just astounding. It's just astounding
yes.
how from one day to the next, people's lives completely changed.
Yes. Well, you know, mm-hmm. what your observation is absolutely correct. And so that leads to, or begs the question, as why is it so different? What is different about this particular pandemic, epidemic, or about this particular organism? Or is it, as Dr. Louis Pasteur points out, is the terrain different? The microbe, essentially, is nothing. The microbe is behaving like microbes have in the past. But there is a change in the terrain. There is a change in the immune systems of the humans alive today as compared with those that were alive in 1918, 1919. Now, I can tell you for a fact that farmers back in the early 20th century also used very toxic chemicals to spray on their trees and to spray on their crops and what have you. I mean, awful things, awful, containing lead and mercury. Oh, yeah. I mean, really bad stuff. But that, although that, those are incredibly toxic, they were sprayed on the surfaces of the vegetables, and they were there to kill bugs or, you know, insects, and in other cases to impair the growth of fungus. But they would wash off. And you could wash them off. You remember when you were growing up, a child mother always told you to wash off the apple or wash off the peaches.
Right. Babies.
You could do that. But the new chemicals that are being used are what is called systemic. And that is they are absorbed into the plant and they are distributed throughout the plant. In addition to that, the genetically modified organism is present in every single cell of the plant. So in every kernel of corn, in every broccoli florette, you know, in excuse me, in every potato, it's all in there and equally distributed because of the nature of the modification that is designed to enable the plant to produce. In the case of thuringiensis BT, the the cell produces the same protein that the bacillus thuringiensis is able to produce. How do they do that? Well, genetically modified the plant so to incorporate into it the capacity to make these, proteins, so that if a bug eats a corn plant, why, it dies. Well, when we eat the corn plant, that same bacillus thuringiensis protein is now in our gut, and that when the microorganisms that we so heavily, that we so depend upon for our immune system competence, also dies when it eats attempts to digest the corn that you just ate. And the same thing with the soybeans and, you know, the soy oils. You look around, soy is in just about everything that we eat. It's really hard to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
And corn mm-hmm. syrup is really hard to avoid in our syrup. And so it's ubiquitous. So those of
right.
us who are aware of that, try to avoid it as much as possible and try to boost our own immune system by taking in foods like kefir and yogurt and cabbage. Come on, help me. but fermented cabbage,
broccoli.
Please. Yeah, no, what is called?
Broccoli.
Yeah, broccoli, right, yeah. But, you know, fermented cabbage or fermented foods also contain microorganisms
right.
that are important for our immune system.
Okay.
And those of us who are cognizant or aware of that are beginning to do that. And so there is a population out there that are healthier than others. But huge segments of the population are not healthy. And the other point that you made is so important, and that is we are being divided. We are being divided against ourselves.
My God.
Yes.
It's terrible.
Yes, it is.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
So.
What?
As you look into your crystal ball.
Yes.
Do you see this going away anytime soon?
No. No, I don't. Yeah, and I'm not the only one who has been asked that question, and I have been reviewing the most recent literature out there, and I'm not a voice out there all by myself. There are other people who are considering all of the factors, just like you have, and saying,
okay.
I don't see an end to this just yet.
Okay, so there's been 800,000 deaths in this country.
Yes.
800,000. What do you foresee as that peaking? What's the number you see?
I haven't thought about that in terms of a number. I really haven't. I don't know how to do that. I really don't.
Okay. Our time is up for today, and I'm sure that you and I will be discussing this issue in other podcasts and radio shows.
Yeah.
So you've been listening to Dr. Peter Cookson. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, like us on Facebook. Peter, thank you, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
You're welcome. Bye. Call me back.